Could you give a brief intro about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Josh Matacor. I've worked in IT since probably like 2007. I had a whole bunch of jobs, like a lot of job hopping, and then I went into cybersecurity, a lot of job hopping there, and then I did some software development.
How did your partnership, the first one, come up with Course Careers? How did that happen?
I just talked to Troy, the Course Careers CEO, and I just told him what I was doing, and he was like, "Oh yeah, it fits. Do you want to work with us?" And I was like, "Sure."
What is your take on some of like the outlandish, get into cyber content out there?
Is there a specific one that comes to mind?
Only one of them to me is fully like just fool's gold, and it's unbelievable. Even if a couple people did it, it just should not be something that should be marketed.
Take this with a grain of salt, and also take this as Josh said. This don't be like, this is the truth. It's just, I'm just telling my opinion. I think a lot of people, the way they think about being into IT or cybersecurity or whatever, it's a bit superficial. I feel I have a lot of ethics when it comes to like making content, like actually selling stuff and taking money from my viewers, right? It depends on like what they're making exactly and like what the price point is.
Would you say that since you become like a content creator in these courses, you've made more money doing this than you did when you were working in corporate?
It's substantially more. In 2024, probably close to like $1 million in 2023, sorry, last year, of gross revenue.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast, where I'm your host, HD, where we talk about everything from getting into cybersecurity to landing another job to how to just maneuver in corporate America. And today, my guest really doesn't need any introduction. A lot of you may know him, but for those that you don't know him, we have, the legendary Josh Matacor on the podcast with us today. And like, we're recording this super late, but it's going to be a good treat for you guys. But if you're watching this on YouTube, you know what to do. Hit the thumbs up button, hit the bell icon to be notified when we're dropping all content. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other streaming platform, please leave us a review and follow the podcast. It helps us out in the podcast analytics. And last but not least, join the Patreon and support the show. But Josh, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you? Thanks for meeting this late. I'm in Japan for people who are watching, and he accommodated me. So thank you so much.
No, it's cool, man. I've been trying to, you probably don't know how long I've probably been trying to get in contact with you. It's been crazy. I've had like a couple of clients, and I think some have been in your Discord. And I was like, yes, I said, I'm going to eventually get to Josh. I had some other ways that I could have gotten to you, but I always wanted it to be more organic with me actually talking to you versus a third party getting involved. And I feel like that's like the best way. I like to do that best when it comes to podcasting. So,
yeah, I appreciate it. Josh, I'm honored to be here.
No, go ahead.
No. I have like too many like email and too many DMs. But I think you emailed one of my emails and I just responded to it normally. And we just set it up. Sorry about that. It's like, I know it's like hard to get in contact sometimes.
No, it's cool. I mean, it was like certain times, like I think I would see you post something late on LinkedIn. It's like, oh, I might catch him on LinkedIn. He might be on LinkedIn at this time of night. So I would just try stuff like that. Just different ways, trying the actual, social aspect of social media that a lot of people forget about. A lot of times it just goes into a straight question versus actually even interacting with one another.
Yeah.
But Josh, for the people who don't know who you are, could you give a brief intro about yourself?
My name is Josh Matacor. I've worked in IT since probably like 2007. I had a whole bunch of jobs, like a lot of job hopping, and then I went into cybersecurity, a lot of job hopping there, and then I did some software development, and I noticed that I was like really good at helping my friends and the people around me in real life or whatever get jobs. I was like, damn, I should just try to do this online. I'm sure I can at least help somebody. So that's kind of how I started YouTube, and I think it was like 2020, and then it's kind of just gone since then. So I make a lot of content. Just try to help people get into tech, IT, and cyber.
That's cool. So what was like your first IT job?
My very first one, it was at the computer lab in a community college. I was sitting in the computer lab just like doing my work, and I seen people coming in and helping the other students. And I was like, damn, I can do that really well. So I just went and talked to the manager. It was like right next to me. And they ended up hiring me the following quarter. And then I kind of did the same thing. That was like a really part-time job. It was like $10 an hour at the time. But I eventually got hired full-time in that department. It's kind of like the same job, but it was full-time. And my first full-time job was like, it was like $49,000 a year or something like that. And then, yeah, that's kind of my first IT job. It was like a help desk lab assistant type thing.
No, what's pretty funny is, so by the time this comes out, everyone has probably watched, I just did an episode with Sandra. I actually recorded with her early in the week.
Oh, damn.
And really? She said, yeah, so she said she had a similar job in college working at, like, you know, the lab and helping students out. And when I was in college, I worked in the College of Business with our IT department and going to help people out in the lab and stuff like that. So I was like, it's just funny how so many people get started out in those ways, or at least like back then. I think it's a little bit different now. So I try not to be too archaic in my approach to helping people get into cybersecurity.
Yeah.
So after kind of like that first job, I do remember seeing some stuff about you also getting into like software engineering or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. A bit. Yeah.
How was that? Like, you know, what made you, I guess, get into that? And I guess what made you maybe stray from it?
I'm just now realizing this. I have like some kind of weird ADHD that's in cycles, and I can't do the same thing for too long. So it was kind of the natural progression for me. I kind of knew how to code a bit early on, like all throughout my IT and cybersecurity, but I really polished my coding skill in like maybe 21 or 22. There was like a lot of tech YouTubers I was watching, like, oh my gosh, what's his name? I can't remember, but a lot of tech YouTubers watching, talking about their big salary in like software engineering. So I was like, I want to do that too. So I just, I went back to WGU and got a comp sci bachelor's degree, like another bachelor's degree. And I like really polished my coding. And then I just applied to a bunch of jobs, and I got a decent one as a contractor at Microsoft doing automation for like a security related team. So that was pretty cool. And it really ties things together with like general IT and cybersecurity, and being able to code is like really, it's really handy, I guess I could say, for my career, like both as an entrepreneur and like, you know, working corporate. So.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think most companies don't say it, but those of us who know, when you kind of look at job descriptions, a lot of them, like, y'all are looking for software engineers, software developers that know something about cybersecurity. Like, I see it like all the time. I was like, you can't expect this person who's probably never coded or even scripted anything to know this stuff, but you can possibly expect, you know, a software engineer or somebody to know that. And so it's kind of funny when I see that. So you're definitely looking for a unicorn. They exist, but I think that's becoming more the norm, because I'm seeing more people come from that software engineering background to kind of some hybrid ground into cybersecurity, because of kind of like that's what the demand is right now in the market.
Yeah. It's harder to acquire those like software engineering skill. Like you said, it's a way easier to get, you know, those development skill and then learn security fundamentals than like the other way around. It's like a huge pain in the ass for me, at least.
Right. So what was, so I know you said you were watching the YouTubers and you were like, well, I want to get a big salary like them. So I know you were previously making around like, we'll just say $50,000 doing the first entry level job. And so what was that jump being a Microsoft contractor?
So I had a lot of jobs between then, but the software engineering contract I was doing at Microsoft, I was primarily coding in Python. That was $180,000, like exactly base salary. And I didn't have like, you know, stock or anything, because I was a contractor. So 180.
Nice, nice. Were you able to like, were you like a W-2 contractor or 1099?
I think I was a 1099. I'm pretty sure I was 1099. Yeah.
Okay. I only say that because now, like, I've also seen like a lot of companies be actually a little bit more open to contract and C2C work. So having like, did you already have your company and stuff established at this time, or that comes a little bit later?
I went, I established my company later. actually. Yeah, I went through like some third party Neil Analytics, or they're Fractal now or something. But
okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I know, like for me, like I have all this stuff established now, so it's like different things that I could do within like my company, just because I've set it up to where I can say, well, technically I say I offer these services. So that's pretty cool. So after that, you're doing software engineering, and then you say, okay, that's cool. But now that I see this next wave. So I guess when was the year that you decided to, I want to say like more so pivot into cybersecurity?
Pivot into cyber.
Right.
So that was back in, I was living in Hawaii, and I think it was the very end of 2017 or beginning of 2018 when I got my first real like cybersecurity job that had cyber in the title. So it's 2018, 2017.
Speaking of Hawaii, like how many places have you lived, man? It seemed like you are like this nomad, like you're always like traveling or something.
Yeah, I am. I think that's another like ADHD thing of me. Because I have the means to like be remote, which is intentional, by the way. But I've lived in a lot of places, but mostly just US, Japan, Thailand. And I just kind of like go between them. But I did live in Hawaii for a year, but that's like, I guess that's the US. So
this is like I said, impromptu question, because I told you before I didn't prepare questions, but how was Hawaii? Because I'm seeing some jobs that kind of want people to move to Hawaii to work there.
Mm-hmm. So Hawaii, it depends on your personality, because it can be like the best place ever, or it can like suck quite a bit. For me, it sucked because we lived in Oahu, and I lived like in Waikiki, like the tourist area, and there's like always police every night and like super noisy. And then when I have to go to work, I would walk to work just because the traffic is bad. But there's like so many like homeless, and like it's like quite dirty in Honolulu. So I just didn't have a great time there. But my partner at the time was she likes the beach and stuff, and she was teaching diving, and she like really liked living there, because she go and work in like kind of the rich area in nature, and she liked it. But I was like in the city, and like, you know, those concrete jungle area, it's like quite bad.
Yeah. Cool. So now we're around 2017, 2018, cyber job. And yeah, I think everybody's around the same. That's when I got my first like cybersecurity job, 2017. Nice. And I think that's kind of like where the time too, where I start seeing like a little bit more of a boom as I start like gradually going more and more, especially like I'm in a DFW area. So it's really kind of gotten bigger since 7 years ago, which is kind of crazy, because everyone would always assume you have to move to the West Coast or East Coast, you know, to work these jobs. But then you're just realizing here, like there's a lot of opportunities here, because all these companies are moving their headquarters and other things to Texas because some of those tax breaks.
What's a DFW? Is that what you said?
Yeah, Dallas Fort Worth.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, Dallas Fort Worth.
Cool.
But so now I'm gonna see how I'm gonna tie this question into it. So we know you're in cyber, and I know that you already know you have a knack for helping people. And so I guess I'm trying to roll into like a little bit more about your cyber career. When did YouTube come into play? And then also like just wanting to educate, like were they kind of all lingering in your mind, or was it like a domino effect for everything?
I knew I wanted to help people try to like teach or something from before I went to Hawaii. Cause I actually had a math YouTube channel first. But it's like low key, like nobody knows about that. But I was like, it takes forever to make videos, and I just like quit doing YouTube. But I made a few, actually I lied. I did make a few videos in Hawaii, like really early on, cause I really wanted to do YouTube. Basically, I made like a couple videos on like how to hack Wi-Fi and how to like write a keylogger and stuff. And some of them are still there, and they got like a decent amount of views. So I was like, yeah, I want to do YouTube, but I didn't actually start until 2020, like really start doing it till 2020. But in between like living in Hawaii and starting YouTube for real, I actually taught at a community college for a couple of quarters. I taught like a Windows Server class and a few cybersecurity topics. And that it was kind of fun because I could interact with like the students in the class or whatever. But the thing that like sucked about that is if you're like an instructor, you can't really control your curriculum a lot of the time. So they're like, teach this book and like teach this stuff. I'm like, this is like useless. I don't want to spend time like teaching this. So the students liked me and like we had a good relationship, but I didn't like to deal with the forced curriculum. And then I wanted more scale than like 30 people at a time. So I took a lot of the lessons that I made in that class and I just put them on YouTube as like tutorials or whatever, and they got some views. And then I was like, yeah, I should just like do YouTube and stop teaching and like stop doing this other stuff. So I just stopped teaching, and then I started just kind of going hard in YouTube at that time. Did that answer your question? I might have got off track a bit.
No, you did. You did for the most part about like starting YouTube. I think I wanted to know, I guess, like, because we're going to get there, because you definitely just touched on something that I'm always critical about when it comes to college curriculums, when it comes to especially kids going to school, trying to get skills for the workforce. But I guess I was trying to ask more about maybe like different roles that you held in like cybersecurity, I guess.
Gotcha. So I can just like talk about each one of my jobs. There's not that many, but the one in Hawaii was like a information security analyst, but I was like one of the first analysts to like start standing up the SOC where I was working. That's like Security Operations Center for people if you don't know. So that was like I was doing like some incident response, and I set up some security tools like the web proxy where we could block certain sites and stuff like this. And I helped set up the DLP system, that's like data loss prevention, where it would like if somebody sent out like 500 social security numbers through email or something, it would flag it and be like, don't do this or whatever, because like data loss prevention, right? That kind of thing. And then I also like stood up the SIM, which was Logrhythm. SIM stands for Security Information Event Management System. It's like a thing that you can aggregate all of your security logs and correlate stuff and see what's happening in your environment for people who don't know what that is. So that was really fun because I could define use cases and make alerts for the SIM and get like a lot of exposure. And that was a cool job. And I worked there for about a year. And then I was like tired of living in Hawaii. So we just like quit and went back to the mainland. And then, gosh, where did I work? I worked some like short contracting job at Avanade, which was like mostly software engineering, to be honest. But after that, I got my next cybersecurity job. It was like a different contract at Microsoft. It was kind of like a security analyst in GRC mixed with program manager, like cybersecurity program manager, where we would work with different teams in Microsoft and like the CIS people, like the, what is that, center of like CS, Central something, Internet Security. I forget what that stands for, like the CIS framework people. And then we would kind of build like a center for Internet Security, I think. And then we would build like controls like specific to Microsoft products, like in benchmarks. So like how to secure Microsoft Azure virtual machine, how to secure Key Vault, how to secure Azure storage account. And then we would make lists and then work with our kind of enterprise customers to see if they made sense. So basically we're like kind of building security controls for Azure. And that was like a lot of fun as well. And then eventually I got a job at King County. It's like a local government in Seattle. I was like a senior information security engineer, but it was for the GRC side. And GRC stands for Governance, Risk, and Compliance. It's like a domain of cybersecurity for those who don't know. And in that job, we were just doing like risk assessments for if like a new project came through. So for example, if you know what, how local government is, there's like a sheriff's office and like a, community, whatever, human services for like, I don't know. And then like social services, like a bunch of different departments, like the court and stuff. And so basically when those departments would do like some project, it would come to my desk. And then I would like look at the project, like what they were doing. And then I would evaluate it against a checklist and to try to figure out if they were storing any kind of like regulated data or something, and then make sure all the appropriate controls are in place. And then we would just kind of like make sure risk was reduced as much as possible before like letting the project, you know, go through the pipeline to completion. So it was like a lot of security paperwork. After that job, I was like a vulnerability management program manager, also in the same local government. Vulnerability management is just like patching operating systems, network devices and stuff like this, making sure like the organizational risk stays small, at least in terms of, you know, patching vulnerabilities and stuff on the assets. And then the pandemic hit and I ended up quitting that job. And then a lot of stuff happened, but I ended up with the last cybersecurity job I had. It was like more software engineering, the contract at Microsoft, where I was doing like a lot of automation for the security team at Microsoft. And that's where I ended at 180K as a contractor.
Nice, man. It seemed like you built a good rapport with the folks at Microsoft.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you say that, because that's really the play. Like, you don't want to like rely on submitting like a ton of applications. Like every time you change jobs, it's really good to like treat people well at your job and try to make your manager's life as easy as like as good as possible and make their life easy in terms of work, you know? And that's how you build like your connections without being like super social, like going to events and stuff. Just be like really nice to your boss, make their life easy, and then quit really gracefully and doing all those knowledge transfer. Because the last job I had at Microsoft, I was like interviewing at like Google and Amazon and Tenable and like these kind of big tech companies. But Microsoft, although I was a contractor, they just like hired me without even having an interview or anything. And they just gave me the salary that I asked for. Just be nice to people and build your network. It helps a lot.
Yeah. Especially if, you know, people can vouch for, you know, your work and the things that you've done it's on wax, you know, this person's name is on documentation somewhere. So that always makes it easier. It depends on how the interview is going, but typically I'll ask, like, if I'm interviewing with the person that may be my direct manager or something, I may ask them like, hey, you know, how could I make your job easier? I always ask them that question. They always love that question. And yes. It helps out.
That's a really good question.
Seriously. Yeah, it's underrated, but it's simple, but it's effective.
Yeah.
So now it's like it's time for the fun stuff. And I can tell you, like, straight up, because I remember like one time you popped up on one of my videos and said, hey, it's me. I was pretty much like doing the ad integration of, I think, like your Course Careers course. But I'm a creator that I only really push things that I believe in that work. And so I've had, you know, a lot of people or clients that have done, whether it's the IT course or the cybersecurity course, and it leads to some great projects and to them getting interviews, you know, eventually jobs. So that's why I push for it. And I really push for it because I think like 2 years ago, or whatever, I was, I think it was the day I was working at home. Cause at this time I was working at JP Morgan, but I think that particular Friday was the day I was remote. And I was like, you know what? Today's going to be a day I'm going to set up Sentinel. Cause I've used QRadar. I've used Splunk. I've used ArcSight. I've used Kibana before. And I was like, let me do this lab by Josh Matacor. Because, you know, at that time, it wasn't Microsoft Sentinel. It was Azure Sentinel. And I saw how thorough it was and how good your information was at, like, teaching people and even updating some of the scripts and stuff. Because I believe by the time you made it, some of the scripts changed. And I was like, this is a thorough guy. And then I started going down the rabbit hole. That's when I found out you had these different courses and everything like that. And so that's when I started, of course, I was supposed to promote them, but I initially promote them because I know they do work.
Oh, thank you. So, I appreciate you saying that.
No, no doubt. No doubt. No, it's the truth. But so how did your partnership, the first one, come up with Course Careers? How did that happen? Did you just submit that you wanted to make an IT, you know, fundamentals course, or did they reach out to you and say, we like your style, can you create something for us? How did that come about?
Yeah. So I was already making one by myself. I was like making it already. It was like well into it. And then my friend, I'm friends with Shane Hummus. He is like another YouTuber, and that guy is friends with Troy. Cause Shane promotes Troy stuff. Troy's like the Course Career CEO, and they knew each other. And then Shane was like, oh, the Course Careers, oh, you're making a course. So why don't you like talk to each other? And then I was like, all right, So I just talked to Troy, the Course Career CEO, and I just told him what I was doing, and he was like, "Oh yeah, it fits. Do you want to work with us?" And I was like, "Sure," because I don't really know the benefits or the implications of doing something like that. I just like went into it being like, "Okay, I'm gonna like learn a lot of stuff," and it ended up being pretty okay. So it was just like an accident because I knew Shane, who knew Troy. So
cool. So, because we'll touch on your other course, the one that I probably push more after this. But, and this probably be hard for you to probably come up with, but do you know, like, I guess off the top of your hand, like, I guess how many people maybe have said they've used your course in some sort of fashion that is, you know, helped them in there, like to get a start going from like no type of, you know, IT background to now all of a sudden they have like some sort of entry level IT job?
Yeah. You mean like how many people in the course versus how many people like got a job or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I recently did analytics for this, on the cybersecurity course, and I have like a whole video, like completely breaking the whole thing down with like graphics and everything. So I guess look for that. It's just not out yet. I'll try to remember off the top of my head. So, in the cybersecurity course, there's about 1900 students who have like bought it or whatever. Who have memberships. And you can kind of think about it like a funnel. I was really surprised when I looked at the analytics because you can see like the progress of like how many people have gone through the course. And so maybe at the top, like, you know, there's like 1900 people who bought it, and then like only like 700 people have completed like half of the course, and then only like 300 people have done the whole course. It's like really interesting like stats, which I wouldn't expect, but I guess it makes sense. And then I keep track of, or I try to keep track of when somebody mentions in Discord, like, I have a staff that does this. I dedicated someone to do it, to like watch for people who like get jobs and then like interact with people and ask them so I can like gather them up or whatever. And when I made that video, I on my list that I seen in Discord who have gotten jobs was 60 people. So like the top of the funnel is, you know, 1900 and then whatever, and then 60 people that I know of who have found jobs who have actually like told me about it. You know, there's probably like at least, you know, more than zero other people who have gotten jobs, and I just don't know anything about it, but I know 60 for sure. But it's kind of weird because, if you think about it, you imagine like when somebody buys a course like that, you just imagine like, okay, they're just going to go through it and then try to job hunt in the end and like get a job. That's kind of like the obvious path, but that's like not what happens. Like a lot of people buy it and they just like sit on it. Like hundreds of people haven't even started it after buying it. So it's like, it's really weird. And a lot of people have finished it, but they're like not actually looking for jobs yet because they're like studying something else. So it's hard to like convey the efficacy of the course, if that makes sense. But I do my best to like tell people like and be transparent. But yeah, did that kind of answer your question?
Yeah. Well, that's about the cybersecurity one. So I would say, is that more or less the same numbers for the IT one too?
Probably, but I don't know. I keep track of those, but I haven't made a video about it and I haven't analyzed the analytics for it yet. But I do have somebody watching both Discords and like keeping track of when people say like, "Oh, I got a job." I know there's like a decent amount in the IT course because the IT course has more people, and it's in my opinion, it's like easier to get into entry level IT than cybersecurity. So you can probably imagine it's like the same ratio or better than the cybersecurity course, just because there's like more people and it's easier to break into the field. But did I say already IT course has, I think, about like 3,500 people, I think.
Oh, wow. So yes, almost triple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 The IT course has like payment plan. It's been out for like longer. Yeah. But yeah.
Exactly. That's the one I direct people to if they don't have like any experience. I tell them, yes, can I help you get into cybersecurity with no background? Yeah. How hard it would be, maybe depend on you and other contributing factors. So I was like, you got to play the numbers game, and based on what I've seen on the job market, on top of the pros and the cons of 2020 to about 2022, of when everybody was just getting jobs, to where companies have kind of snatched their power back with the return to office and hiring different ways and making interviews a little bit harder, I was like, no, it's kind of different now.
Yeah, For sure. Like tech has those cycles that follow this, the economic uncertainty, unlike, you know, being a nurse or something. It's like,
right. Yeah. And I've seen that firsthand in my own career of like, you know, technically having a job, but due to business, not getting it just because of like, hey, we got to hold out on these funds until Q1. So, yeah. which is some of the things that people don't talk about. But one of the other things I want to touch on and just tell you, or it's one, tell you, but two, also ask you, because people do this to me a lot. Some people don't like necessarily purchase like, you know, my coaching services or anything like that, but they watch like a lot of my content. And so I've had people, like recently a guy reached out to me. He said, hey, I've been watching your content for the last 3 years. And I want to let you know, I got my first, you know, sock analyst job, and I used to work like in a warehouse or whatever. So I like to say that you probably can't quantify it, but there's probably so many people that you help get jobs, they probably just haven't all told you. Yo, if you're looking for a way to start your cybersecurity career, then check out Josh Matacor's course at Level Careers. He has a great cybersecurity course targeted for beginners, very affordable. And if you're familiar with Josh Matacor, he's also a brilliant YouTuber and puts out a lot of helpful content. So
here are some of the reasons why you can choose cybersecurity: high demand, job security, competitive salary, work variety, and fulfilling work. The national average salary for information security analysts is $113,000. Overview of the course: theory introduction, security refresher, security frameworks, security regulations and standards, security operations signals. Then you have these great labs with Azure, logging and monitoring, Microsoft Sentinel, secure cloud configuration
content. So if you're interested in that course, click the link in my bio and use my code to get 10% off your course. So yeah. I would just say like, that's another like measurement. Like that's kind of one of the things like I kind of talk about as well too. Is like, you know, I can't necessarily quantify all these people, but I do know like whatever, whether it's an introspective video or an interview like this, I always put it out with saying, hey, if it only reaches like one person, that person that's meant to reach, then it's like did its job. So that's one of the things I also try to look at when I'm making content. Cause you know, you can't prove, you can't make everybody happy. I've even seen some of the hecklers in your videos sometimes talking about some, he's only showing the success stories. And I'm like, who wouldn't? Like,
what do you want me to, what do you want me to, what's the alternative? I know that comment that you're saying.
Yeah. I saw it when I was like, come on, bro. I like, the thing is, and of course you're a course maker and you have your Discord, and there's probably some other things you do that, you know, I don't know about, but I know for me being a coach, you know, I know right on from who I meet with, who's possibly going to be the most successful and who possibly is going to have like some trouble, but they'll eventually get there. It's all really still based on and contingent on that person. And a lot of people try to take their accountability off of it when they feel like they bought a service or a course. And so they try to shift it to you when, hey, I've already been in the industry. I made this stuff to actually help you, because to go get this information somewhere else, they would charge you triple, quadruple the price of what you're being charged here. Now it's on you to at least take this information and springboard it into a career. Cause that's one of the other things I talk about. I say, okay, cool. You bought, you know, this course and you did all this and that. Number one, I tell people the stuff you did while doing the course, still try to do it sometime every day because you're new to it and you'll forget it. And I say, okay, after that, see, based off the research and maybe what domain that you want to do, see how you can build off of the skills or add on to that sim environment you just made to keep your skills sharp and to kind of impress employers. So a lot of people are just stopping at, you know, phase one, not realizing there are other phases they can go to, but they are not pushing themselves. They're thinking, okay, which I've never heard you say directly, if you do this course, you're going to get into cybersecurity. But they'll say, well, I bought this course and I should get in. Or this person right here, they went from this and that, they got in, but maybe that person wasn't willing to put in, you know, 100 applications a week or something or whatever. You know, when you are, you don't have the experience, you are unfortunately playing a numbers game. I don't really agree with the spray and pray method, but it does happen to work for some people.
It depends on how good your resume is. Like if you have like a 10-10 resume, you might get, you know, a callback or something after submitting 50 applications, but you have like a, some crap is wrong with it. You're using like columns and you're getting like filtered by the ATS. It's possible you can submit like 1,000 applications and like nothing happens. Right. So it just,
Funny you said that. The the latest talk of the town last week on Twitter, and we covered this like live on the podcast last week, was some guy tweeted that he got laid off in, I think, June of 2023. And I think they technically still don't have a job now. And since then, they have applied to 493 jobs and, you know, haven't gotten any offers or any like hitbacks or anything like that. And so B's commented on it and said, well, that's only 10 a week. You really weren't applying enough. She said, if possible, I tell the people in my courses to apply to 10 a day if you can. And that kind of, that everybody like had their own opinion on that. While I don't agree, like I said, to apply for a lot, I do believe if you only were applying to 10 per week, then that may not be enough for you. And if you're going through that many, I mean, of course, bad resume, and you might not have a lot of skills. You might not be a marketable person in this market. And that's, I think, a lot of people are not doing. One of the things I talk about, I think I talked about this in my LinkedIn learning course, but also the clients or anybody else, is like being self-aware with where you are, where your skill set stands, because it'll also help you in an interview to not beef up your resume like you're some staff level security engineer. And then you get into the interview and then they start asking you staff level questions and you really are like a notch below senior level. I've seen that happen too. Josh, in your experience, what do you think are some of the, it's twofold, right? What do you think are some of the issues with, I guess, like the cybersecurity industry as a whole right now? And that can come from the companies looking for talent and also the people that are trying to get in.
Yeah. So one big problem is, you know, people are always like, there's a lot of cybersecurity jobs and like, and there's a talent gap, but a lot of companies don't want to hire somebody with like, you know, quote unquote, no experience, because a lot of the time the company doesn't actually like, they can't train them because they don't know, they don't really know how to do it. They want somebody that can already at least do some stuff and figure some stuff out. So that's kind of the problem. Cause like they don't want to train new people. So you have to like train yourself in terms of like the people trying to get into the industry. You have to like, you have to train yourself up with like a lot of repetitive, like hands-on stuff and a lot of effort and study. And you have to like have something tangible to show for it. Remember, it's just like a, you have to basically manipulate people into hiring you, like convey to them, if you want to say it in a positive way, like make them believe that you know what you're doing and that you've done similar XYZ things before. Because if you don't have any actual experience and you don't have anything like tangible, like a portfolio, it's, you know, your chances are like way less likely, I guess, than somebody who has something to show like what you actually did. So I guess to summarize problems, companies don't want to hire new people because they don't know how to train them at all. And the new people don't have experience and they don't have anything tangible. That's kind of like the gap I'm feeling with my like content and my course and stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, what was it, last year or whatever year it was, I actually made a video to debunk like the entry level or all these jobs they say exist when I went on CyberSeek and I was showing them that, hey, they're kind of lumping all these other jobs up as being cybersecurity jobs when they have aspects of cybersecurity, but it's not a pure cybersecurity job. So it's like, that is another reason why the numbers are a bit inflated. And you're right. I mean, I've told people plenty of times, I said, I can't really tell you the last time I was actually trained. Like once they bring you a senior level or above, they expect you within a week or two to just hit the ground running. So there is no training. And like one of the things I've been talking to clients with now, because pretty much also my specialty is like helping people get on the blue team. So IR, SOC analyst stuff, I'm the go-to guy for that. I've been telling them, say, okay, cool. Even if you're interviewing for this entry-level role, I'm going to help you seem like you are a tier two or tier three, because you're going to have to really wow them in order to get this nod. And my latest client will start Monday with a job from Yahoo. They specifically said, hey, you outperform your resume.
Oh, wow.
And so that is the goal too. It's like you said, like you may not have the best resume, but if you can really market and sell yourself in that interview, that's really all that counts. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. So, and that's the hard part. A lot of people don't know how to interview. It is tough to expect somebody especially somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience to just come in and interview well. And knowing that sometimes the interviewers are going to ask them questions that they possibly don't know or don't even know how to prepare for what they may be asked. Like that's, I wish interviews would be, have like, I'm not going to say should have a study guide, but it should be something to where you can at least know a little bit of what they're actually about if it's related to the job versus stuff that really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I have like some strategy to try to help people deal with that, that involves like, you know, the job description and ChatGPT. I agree.
Yeah. My simple formula for the blue team stuff is like, whether there have been questions I've been asked in interviews or whatever, like, cause they're pinned to my LinkedIn, but they're just scenario questions. And I tell all clients that come to me and say, oh, I want to be a SOC analyst. I say, well, you know, go try that, you know, those questions and see how you do. And sometimes it's like, well, I don't know this answer or whatever. I said, check it out. When you're working in a SOC or IR, every alert that fires, you're not going to know what it does. You're going to have to use. Matter of fact, tell them in an interview, I would Google, you know, this file path or see what it is. Cause they're going to say, good. That's what I would do too. But I was like, I'm going to answer them. Cause I was like, the goal of this is to show you how to think. And that's like the hardest part of that. It's like taking that switch off and just learning how to analyze it and being able to decipher, is it malicious or is it not? And when they escalate and when they're not, and being concise in what you do, like those are the things that they're looking for. And if you can get that, you'll do good on pretty much most, you know, entry to mid-level SOC roles, at least the interviews.
Nice. Yeah.
But now I want to get into like some fun stuff about, I guess, when did you know, like you made it on YouTube, I guess, like.
When people start hating on me and like leaving hate comments, they're like completely unfounded in my opinion. I was like, okay, I made it already. These people hate me for no reason.
Yeah, I think that's the fun stuff for me. For me, I have fun with it as long as like it's not something that like I don't really take them people too serious because most of them don't even have a real picture. So I'm just like, whatever. You just hide behind the keyboard. But I guess. What was the video, I guess, that really took off your channel?
Oddly enough, it was like the first video I made when I seriously started doing YouTube. It was just about how to finish WGU fast. And it didn't take off right away. It was like way later. And it was one of those like really big parabolic curves, like that happened over like a few months. I don't know if you've seen those in the analytics, but it was probably that video. Yeah.
It shocks me sometimes too. That's kind of another reason why I'm not always so fixated on like the first day. Cause I was like, it could be anything that happens. And then all of a sudden a video would just start like getting looked at like crazy. Unless now sometimes I try to drop stuff at the right time. And it just works out based on like everything that I'm seeing on YouTube search versus the stuff I know people are searching. So I try to do that sometimes to play with the SEO and see like how that goes just from a searchable term and what people like to look at. So
that's smart.
I do that. So now you are full-time content creator, or are you doing like some other stuff that you're leveraging your business with? What's going on with you?
Yeah, I have a bunch of projects. So I have like a team of people, by the way. I have 10 employees, 4 Japanese, and then I think 6 Filipino, no, 5 Filipino and like a American, another American. So basically, we have like our normal content pipeline. We release like 3 videos per week. We're really far ahead on that now. So I'm kind of focusing on, I'm building out like a practice exam questions, like test banks for all of the WGU cybersecurity certifications you have to get for that degree and then some. So we're building out a lot of those practice questions, joshmatacore.tech/exams. I'm working on that. And then I'm working on another project. I'm going to make a school community where I interact with like biweekly or something, and we'll do like a live Q&A. Couple times a month. And then the courses on that platform are going to be vulnerability management centric. So I acquired Tenable already, like the enterprise licenses for Tenable, like the actual platform. And then I got like Azure tenant, and I'm going to have the students practice vulnerability management using the Azure platform and then Tenable. So I'm still building that. I've got all the architecture and stuff is set up. I'm just like recording the rest of the whatever videos for the course. And that's pretty much it. I'm thinking about trying to get into like government contracting and becoming like a staffing agency, because that's kind of the logical next thing for me to do, because I'm creating a bunch of cybersecurity and IT talent. So it would be useful for me to direct them to, you know, a government job or something like this. So, but that's not too deep. I'm just like thinking about it. But yeah, that's pretty much all I'm doing.
No, it's cool, because it's kind of some of the things that I want to do eventually, to where maybe it's not staffing, but maybe I get my own contracts and I can hire former clients that I know I've technically trained to do the role and they can do it. So that's pretty cool. Now, you could plead the fifth to this question or not.
Sure.
But have you ever, I guess, what is your take on some of like the outlandish get into cyber content out there?
Is there a specific one that comes to mind?
There are a lot. Well, there are not a lot, but there are a couple, right? And I think if you want to be honest, only one of them to me is fully like just fool's gold, and it's unbelievable. Even if, you know, a couple people did it, it just should not be something that should be marketed. And that particular one is about trying to tell people who can go from nothing to getting into GRC in 45 days. Now, I just will stand on like my square and say, I don't believe you, because it's just impossible to think a company wants to hire somebody unless they are doing some other things that the showcase that this person has, like these type of skill sets. I don't believe it.
Yeah. So I think take this with a grain of salt, and also take this as Josh said this. Don't be like, this is the truth. It's just, I'm just telling my opinion to you and the audience. But I think a lot of people don't, the way they think about breaking into IT or cybersecurity or whatever, it's a bit superficial, and it's not very holistic, I guess. Like, I don't know. I feel I have a lot of ethics when it comes to like making content, like actually selling stuff and taking money from my viewers, right? So it depends on like what they're making exactly and like what the price point is. So for example, if someone's selling something for like $10,000 and like you can get into GRC in 45 days, that's, I don't think that's ethical, and I don't think that's like even something that you should be doing or saying. I don't even say anything like that at all. Right. And my course is it's like $500, right? And I say, if you go through this and implement it properly, your chances will greatly increase, but I can't guarantee anything. And as soon as somebody like guarantees something, it's like automatically a scam, to be honest, because you can't control the economic climate. You can't control how the student is going to execute. There's like too many stuff that you don't know about to like make those claims. Yeah, it just depends on how expensive something is. Like if that GRC 40, I don't know who that is, by the way, for the record, but if that GRC 45 days,
what's that? Yeah, these people remain anonymous. That way it can always be on me if somebody knows who it is. They'll probably say, honestly, I will probably tell you like after this is offline, but people always say certain creators' names in my comments when I make comments about stuff. And I'm like, that's y'all saying that, but it's not me.
Yeah.
But audience, I do want to let you know that Josh is an example of having good content and good courses will still help you be successful, and how Josh is not necessarily, because I'm pretty sure you have the means to go get the nicest car you want to, and whether you go buy a house or rent a house and, you know, market like a lifestyle versus just like the knowledge needed. Josh is a good example of that. It doesn't take all that to help people. And I think that's one of the psychology things that plays on people in need is, oh, cool. I want the nice car. I want the nice girl on my arm. I want the, you know, of course, the American dream, the house with the picket fence and all that stuff. But the deal is people just aren't being realists. Like people don't, I know you said you had a math channel, so I thought about like the math channel, and we think about like probability. So even looking at the probability of, you know, making six figures like in your first job, let alone how much it even takes to actually afford a house nowadays or all this other stuff. Or the probability of getting a six-figure cybersecurity job. So that's even another layer. So it's like all these different things. And there are people that works for, but we don't talk about the minority. We talk about the majority. And when people kind of go through some of those things of like spending like excess a lot of money before they do their due diligence or because they've been had, it actually makes it harder for the people who want to like do something honest and help people with their content. It makes it that much tougher on you. Because I run into a lot of people, I spent money on all these services and, you know, yada, 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 and then nothing happened. I was like, well, you know, I got free content out there. But I was like, unfortunately, like you guys don't listen to the people that are telling you, hey, go vet, you know, these people or get somebody in the industry to look at some of their, you know, that course curriculum type of stuff and kind of go from there versus just, you know, signing your life away. Like you said, some of this stuff costs as much as a full year in college on campus, room and board included.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. I know. It's bonkers. Yeah. Definitely research Google, at least Google the person before you buy their course.
Yeah. Some of these people even got Reddits about them. That's all I'm going to say right there. But okay, Josh, this will be a cool one. What's something that the audience nor probably YouTube knows about you?
That they do know about me?
That they don't know, like something like nobody knows, like some like random fact about you.
Okay, I have a few. Well, they might know. I lived in my car for during the pandemic. I think when was that? Like February 2022 for 6 months. I lived in my Tesla, which I don't have anymore. I sold it to my family friend last week, but I lived in that for 6 months to like fix my mental health. It was like all messed up. And I sold my house and got rid of like all my stuff. And I just like lived in the car and I would just go to the beach and like work for my car. A lot of people probably don't know that. I don't know if that's like interesting enough.
I mean, that can start a whole different conversation, because you know they're the people that like go get these vans and they're like a nomads and like they'll fix their van up so they'll like sleep in it and all this other stuff. And I think that's cool. I think it's like, it's, you know, some type of metaphor of pretty much kind of like building yourself up from zero, like pretty much kind of like just wanting to start back at zero and like just getting rid of everything and maybe remind you of something and then, you know, doing that 180. So no, I think that definitely is interesting, because it may be somebody, like I said, who watches this and like, hey, you know, that was me. Oh, okay. He did it. I'm doing something that's not uncommon. People are probably looking at me a certain way, but no, I'm looking out for myself. And that's what I'll probably tell people, like, just look out for you. You're the only person that's going to care about yourself like you do.
Yeah. And it surprisingly helped a lot. So, and it's something I've always wanted to do. So if you feel like you want to do something crazy like that, it might not be as crazy as you think. And it might help you more than you think too.
Yeah. I am interested to see, I guess, like, did you like go put like your clothes and stuff in storage or?
What did I have? I had one box I think I gave to a family member, and then the rest of the stuff I just like give it away. I didn't have anything. I just had like clothes in a car and like, the box at my mom's house or something. I can't remember.
Cause I know some people, it's kind of tricky. It depends on the place, but you know, some people, they will move into like a storage unit.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to, especially like catch you, but this is like, it could work if no one like ever notices like you're in there. Like, I don't know. That's interesting. That actually makes me want to do a deep dive on like people living in storage units and like how common it is and how do they get caught? Like, what are they doing wrong? Because if I ever did it, it would have to be like a 24/7 place that's like having my unit that's indoor with AC. And I probably would only come in there late at night and then like go to the gym to shower and workout shower. And then if I was working, go work. And I would just stay out all day. Like that's how I would do it. So nobody would like catch on to like whatever I'm doing. Cause I've always said that too. I was like, if I ever hit rock bottom, I'm going to always have me a membership to a 24/7 gym. because
I have. Hey, yeah, it's good. That's what,
yeah,
because
you can go in there and work out, fall asleep in there, go shower, and get on about your way.
Yeah, it's good.
Now, this last question will be, it's an interesting one, because I always find out something I probably should have asked, but. And I think I just thought of another question to ask you, but I'm asking this anyway. What's one question that I didn't ask you that you wished I would have asked you?
That I wish. Nothing comes to mind, I guess. Maybe why do I, oh God, I don't know. What's my favorite place to live, I guess?
Or to visit? Yeah. What is it though?
Probably, oh, because I move so much. It's probably, I don't know. Probably Japan or Thailand. One of those two for different reasons. Thailand is just like really cheap. And I feel like, okay, I feel like when I go to Thailand, I feel like I'm on vacation. And when I'm in Japan, I feel like it's like work mode, basically. But yeah, different reasons. A lot of different tasty foods. And I have like those ADHD, so I can't like stay in one place.
So how good is your Japanese?
It's okay. I can speak casual, everyday stuff. Do you want me to say something?
Yeah.
What should I say?
I don't know. Like, I know the other day, this is going to be like very random, but one of my favorite childhood movies as a kid growing up was Three Ninjas Kickback, and that's when they went to Japan. And so they had to learn a couple of like, no words to say like thank you or like other stuff. So
okay.
Yeah, like saying like thank you or telling somebody like, you know, how good this is or something like simple stuff, like not nothing crazy.
Okay. Thank you is just like, oh, arigato gozaimasu. And then this is tasty. I can say mecha oishii kore. That's like a native sounding way to say it. Or if you're reading Japanese from a textbook, it will be like, oh, kore wa totemo oishii desu. Or something like that.
So you've adapted that because the way that you're saying that are the reasons that I like watching my anime mostly subbed, because I feel like the actors invoked more emotion when they're doing it subbed, because of course it's like their native tongue, but it sounds better.
Yeah. So yeah, I think cool. So. I agree. No, thanks.
But I guess this is the last question. I guess because people probably want to know this, like, you actually don't have to share this, but I'm only asking this because the episode I did with Sandra, she's like, I'm surprised you didn't ask me like more salary stuff. But my question is, I guess, going to be more around like, if you made like, you know, that good amount of money with the contracts and stuff like that, would you say that since you become like a content creator in these courses, you've made more money doing this than you did when you were working in corporate?
Yeah, it's substantially more. I'll answer this, you know, be transparent in all of these things. It's okay. So it's a huge difference, working, you know, a job, like a normal job, and then running a business. Cause what my viewers see is like, oh, he's a YouTuber. He's like making YouTuber and Josh is selling his course. But there's like 10 people working on the stuff that I put out. I have like 4 long form editors, 2 short form editors. I have like a security support engineering person who like monitors the Discords and does those Azure technical stuff. I have like a lot. I have like a staff of people, which costs about like, it's around like $25,000 a month of like salary, right? And I'm like, in my opinion, I'm ethical in like the way that I pay people. I try to be or whatever. So I could get
that's
less
to
labor.
A million in salary for the year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's substantial. And I have like a lot of expense and stuff. So in 2024, probably close to like $1 million in 2023, sorry, last year, of gross revenue, right? But you notice like it costs like $250,000 to pay the staff, right? And then I have like a lot of other expense, and then tax was like a bonkers. I think I paid like how much did I pay, like 80 or 90k or something in taxes. So you can, I guess, figure out if you want, like, yeah, all that. But it's substantially more, but it's it's kind of difficult because I have like 10,000 like things to juggle or whatever. And it's just like, it's a lot different than just like going to work and like, I have a big sack of money on my back. I'm rich. It's not like that at all. Cause I don't do anything but work. And I try to be like, have a really good relationship with my staff too. And I really try to like, give quality stuff to like the audience and people who consume my content. Whatever you're imagining, it's probably not that. It's hard for me to like convey how difficult what I'm doing is. But I'm getting like, you know, a decent chunk of money. So I try to use that to give like higher quality content for people and like higher quality courses, and then hire people to like pay attention to certain things like email and like Discord. So when something bad happens, that person can like tell me and I can address it, because I can't do all those things at once. And I try to like, you know, build new product stuff and stuff. So like the new platform that uses Tenable, all of that is like, it's not cheap to like license Enterprise Tenable and like you have the students use my own tenant in Azure. Like, I don't know how that's going to go, but I'm going to, you know, use some of the money that I'm getting from like the courses and like AdSense and all that. And then, try to like build nice platforms for people to use and just keep trying to make it like better and better. So people have this misconception, like courses, I'm like a millionaire, but it's like, for me, it's like not really like that. Cause like, I don't have a car. I don't have like Jack. This is my jewelry that I have is like this stuff. My lifestyle, the only thing that's like different is I just live in like random places like all the time. But yeah, so almost $1 million gross revenue last year, like more than that this year, but it's like
I'm pretty sure your accountant is going to start telling you, hey, we need you to buy some properties and start doing some stuff with this money pretty soon. If you're not
already doing it. I tried. It's interesting. Oh my God. We could talk about this for like a long time because, investing is like I can invest back in my business and that might make more return than properties, but it's also a pain in the ass because I have to like work. It's something we could talk about for like a long time.
Yeah. I want to ask you this last one and then I'm going to let you go. Cause like I said, I am a podcaster, so I can talk, but
sure.
I'm a person, I've been really staunch on using Slack, but the only problem is the pro and the con is, for all the extra stuff I like to do, that I would want to do with Slack, they want me to pay for it. Of course, it is secure. Well, I feel like it is more secure than Discord based on some of the things I see transpiring around Discord. Mm-hmm. Would you advise me to make the switch to Discord or stick with Slack?
I use Slack for my company. Me and my coworkers, employees, chat. And do work on Slack and coordinate stuff. And then I use Discord for both of the courses. I don't really like Discord, to be honest. I'm not prepared to give an answer for that because I don't know why. I think I just got PTSD from using it too much. But are you talking about for like your clients and like a tiny group of people?
Right. Yeah. Cause I like, for whatever reason, it's just like, I use Discord sometimes for like different people courses. I've maybe like been a part of to go find an answer or something, but it's just something about it that I really don't like, and I always feel like everything is just copying off of Slack anyway, because I've been using Slack since like 2016. So
yeah, I like Slack better.
You're kind of biased when it comes to Slack.
Yeah, I don't use all those like crazy stuff with Slack, but we use like the basic features of it, and I prefer it to Discord because it tends to like make more intuitive sense for me. And also just like tired of looking at Discord.
I agree. Well, Josh, man, it's been a blast having you on, man. You're welcome to come on the platform anytime.
Well, thank you.
You got any last words you want to lead the audience with?
I guess for those trying to get into IT or cybersecurity, like the more you do, this is going to sound weird, but like the more you do, the more you can do in the future. So just like do something, consume our free content, you know, listen to his YouTube, his channel, subscribe, and just do your best. The more you do, the more you can do in the future. And like your future self is going to thank your past self. I always like thank past Josh for my hard decisions I made in the past. So yeah, just like good luck, you know, and just do your best.
All right. And you guys, make sure you go check out his content. I'm telling you, you'll really be blessed by it. But as I always say, let's stay textual. And until next time, we out. Peace.